What impresses you? What do you find really impressive? One of the things that I love about the English language is that we love to use bigger and more grandiose terms to express the impressive. Don't get me wrong, it's not just English, but I get to study more English than anything else, so I get to really consider it and have great impact. One of the things that we use to get impressive ideas is that we try and use a bigger and bigger term. It isn't just nice, it's more than just great, it's magnificent. I mean, we get these bigger and bigger words to try and express the greatness of these things. And it's not just in words, we express it in numbers as well. You know, I still remember when my younger brother, probably about, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years old, somewhere in there, and he came home from Halloween and he had all this candy, and he said, "I've never gotten so much candy before." And I said, "Really? How much candy do you suppose you got?" And he said, I think I got 1,000,000 pieces. And I said, "I doubt that. 1,000,000 pieces at about an ounce of candy each, it'd still weigh over 50,000 pounds, and I don't think you brought that home in your pillowcase, so I doubt that." But the idea was to impress this large number, this great number, this massiveness. But that's not really what it needs to be. Large numbers can be impressively large all by themselves. 1,000 is a really impressive number. If you don't think so, try and lift 1,000 pennies. It's impressive, trust me. It's not impossible, we can do it, but it's still impressive. These numbers don't have to be terrifyingly large to be impressive. One of the things that I love about it is just in modern language, we talk about millions, we talk about billions, you know, the nation's billions of dollars in debt. It begins to lose its impact. We don't have a sense of the grandiose size of what these things mean. What does it come to? Well, in so many ways, in the book of Revelation, we see this. We see this grandiose number, 144,000. And if you really stop to think about it, that's a lot of people. It is. It is a lot of people. I went to Mass with the Pope at World Youth Day in Germany. There were 1.7 million people present at Mass. And suddenly it doesn't seem that impressive, you know, 144,000. It shouldn't. The number is still huge. It's still a grandiose number, 144,000. Why is this important? Well, when they said to John, when John is writing the book of Revelation and he looks out and he checks the number of those who have been marked with the seal, those who are set aside as those for the kingdom of heaven, he looks out over this number and he sees 144,000. Remember that for John, that's his million mark. It's such a big number for John that he couldn't imagine anyone trying to count that high, let alone try and count that many people. It isn't that John was trying to tie in and say, only 144,000 people get into heaven. That many people have already died on earth that are definitely holy, so I guess we're all just out of luck. None of us get to go to heaven. That's not what John's trying to say. John is trying to express to us in so many ways that this is such a big number. It's such a massive number of people. It's like 144,000. Don't underestimate that 144,000 is also a derivative of 12, which ties in for John and the 12 tribes of Israel and making sure that none of the tribes are forgotten by God. And it has other incredible meanings. I don't want you to think that that's just the only thing he's trying to express. There's other things that come about to it. The thing I love about it is we get this idea, we look at this particular number, and we kind of forget what it really means. This massively impressive thing. It's easy to forget the perspective on things. I love it in John. We get this beautiful letter from John. John wrote this wonderful thing for us. And yet we hear it so often sometimes that we forget the impact, the meaning of the statement actually given. Because what does it actually say? It says, "See what love has bestowed on us, that we may be called children of God." And we hear it. I hear it all the time. I'm sure you do too. We're children of God. We're God's children. He loves us. God loves you. Don't you remember? God loves you. I mean, it's we're reminded of it all the time. To the point where we actually are in danger of forgetting that that's a really important statement. And that it isn't just a throwaway line. God didn't just say at the end of the earth, really quick, "I love you," and then walk away awkwardly and think, "Oh man, I told him I loved him. Now I have to make sure that I show him I love him for the rest of their days." No, it's intentional. It's this intentional moment where he actually expresses that he loves us, that he marks us as children of God. That it isn't just some kind of grand penal system. We aren't just given a bunch of rules to follow by God, and if we screw up, then we have to pay the price and go to prison or God's prison or whatever that may be and just serve our sentence and then hopefully get to move on from it. It isn't strictly a penal system. It isn't just an agreement, a contract between two members where, you know, if one part breaks the contract often enough, you just sort of give up on them and go, you know what, I'm not entering a contract with someone who can't keep their side of the bargain. No, we're children. We're set apart as children, and think about it. As children, we fail. From time to time, we let our parents down, we mess up, we don't do it the way we're supposed to, we fail over and over and over again, we don't do it right the first 10th, 100th, 1000th time. And God still wants us. He still wants to be close to us. And what does He really want from us? What is it particularly He's asking of us? Well, He wants us to live into these Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are they who mourn. Blessed are the meek, who hunger and thirst for righteousness, who are merciful, who are clean of heart, who are peacemakers, who are persecuted. Why? So that they can have the kingdom of heaven. So they can be comforted and inherit the land, who are satisfied, who are shown mercy, who will see God. Growing up, I was pretty sure you had to pick one because they were all too hard. I had to pick one and just really try and focus on that, and I'd set out to do that. So I was looking at the reward system and trying to figure, comforted, you know, mourning, that's not as high as some of the other ones, you know. I wanted to try and pick one of the harder ones because the reward seemed greater, so I wanted to set out on that. But really the fascinating thing about it is if we're genuine about our life and the Beatitudes, it's not about picking one. Honestly, in the other direction, it'd be a lot like picking a commandment and deciding that would be the one commandment I don't break. Forget the other nine. I'm just going to not break this one. So as long as I don't kill anybody, we'll forget if I steal everything and ignore everyone else. But, you know, as long as I don't kill anybody, then I'm okay. So it's actually the same challenge in the other direction. These Beatitudes call us to be saints. And this is the fascinating thing about it. We're invited to be saints. That is our challenge. Our one goal, our one focus above everything else is to become saints. We have this beautiful solemnity, this wonderful and exciting solemnity where we celebrate All Saints' Day. That's why we had All Hallows' Eve last night, because today we have All Hallows' Day. All Saints' Day. All the Holy Ones. Why? Because we actually know as a church that there's no way we'd be able to celebrate all the saints throughout the year otherwise. Never underestimate that we have literally hundreds of canonized saints, and that doesn't even begin to scratch the surface of the saints that we have from tradition before the canonization process came about. Never underestimate that within these hundreds and hundreds of saints, there's just not enough days in the year to celebrate all of them. And that's not even enough. Today we celebrate All Saints because we don't just celebrate those saints that the church has canonized. We don't just celebrate the ones that the church has actually announced as publicly acknowledging as them as saints. Today we celebrate every saint in heaven. All of them. The exceptional, and maybe the less exceptional. They didn't have to change the world with their writings. They didn't have to do incredible miracles every step of the way. It isn't that they had to reach a million. Actually, quite the opposite. They had to live into the Beatitudes. They had to live into this gentle and beautiful call to be these Beatitudes. And we celebrate them today. The way I think of it, I read a lot of comic books. I hope this isn't news for anyone. I read a lot of comic books. My favorite character is Batman. It is. I love Batman. It's my favorite comic book character. I'm fascinated by him in so many ways. Batman is a public figure. They know that Batman is out there. They don't know his identity, but that's not the point. People know that Batman is out there. In the city of Gotham, they fear Batman. You fear Batman if you're causing crime. If you don't cause crime, you live in the consolation of knowing that Batman's there trying to protect him. But you know the thing that fascinates me is that behind Batman is a guy named Alfred. And Alfred has a whole backstory. Most people are like, oh yeah, he's the butler, no big deal, Alfred. He was given a full name. He's Alfred Pennyworth. He actually has a last name. It's kind of exciting. Alfred actually served in the Royal Air Force before the United States actually got involved in any of the Great War. He's a field surgeon. He was a member of the OSS. He fought and served in secret services. He actually was trained in triage combat and self-defense. He was fully versed in economics and economic gain. He was responsible for the rise and fall of small, unnamed countries that rose and fall during communist power. He actually did all of these things before he decided to retire and become the butler of the Wang family. And he actually joined the Wang family for a number of reasons, depending on which backstory you read. That kind of varies from guy to guy. But the thing that I love most about Alfred, I absolutely do, I really, really do, is that Batman, impressive as he is, for all the things that he can do, needs Alfred. I love when we celebrate the solemnity of All Saints, because while Batman may be the recognized superhero, that doesn't mean that Alfred isn't. He doesn't need the recognition. He doesn't need his name whispered in the dark in fear. He actually has to do what's right because it's the right thing to do. Today we celebrate All Saints Day. We celebrate a day where we recognize all the saints that inspired us to greatness, whether they are written in the canons of the church or not. Today we celebrate all the saints that lived lives of holiness because they were supposed to, not because some great miracle brought them about, not because they changed the world with their single action, not because they rewrote history books because of their impact, but because they remembered that each and every last one of us, you and I, everyone, not just the ones sitting in church, not just the people who live in Dixon, not just people in Illinois, not just people in the United States, everybody. Everybody is called to be a saint. Everyone is called to holiness. And there's that term, holiness. And it fascinates me because as we live into a modern life, we have that term holiness, and yet somehow we begin to think that holiness is just those exceptional feats, those above and beyond moments where we see the greatest glories of the saints. What we should never underestimate is that you and I, each and every one of us, is called to a universal holiness. And it doesn't have to be public like that. I still remember when I entered seminary. I was 18 years old. I graduated from college, or high school. I graduated from high school. I was entering college seminary. And I remember having that discussion with most of my friends at one time or another. We'd be in the middle of anything else. And, well, I'll be honest, I was a teenage boy, so most of it circled around food because we did that a lot. But, you know, we'd be sitting around any number of our eight meals that day, and one of them would just look at me, and it would be completely out of the blue, so I would never have any idea where the context was coming from. But they would say, "So you're going to do this, huh?" Of course, I'm thinking of the pizza in front of me, and if he's challenging me to eat it before he can finish his, but, you know, I'm not really sure. So eventually I figure out, you know, referring to what I'm about to embark on entering seminary, and he says, "Well, you're going to do this, huh?" I'm like, "Well, what do you mean specifically when you say that? I'm going to college, so are you." "Yeah, but be a priest? I don't think I can do that." And I would ask them genuinely, "Which part? The being a priest part?" Like, "No. No, that being holy." And I'd look at them and say, "Obviously you don't know very many priests, but that's..." Joke between me and a few other people, apparently. But more than anything, it had to be that moment where I reminded my friends, and I think all of us need a moment to consider, that all of us, without exception, is called to be holy. We're called to be saints. Whether or not we ever see a miracle in our life, whether or not people ever write about our exploits, whether or not our diary, our autobiography, our reflections are ever published, we are all called to that sainthood. And today, on this first day of November, today we celebrate all of those saints. Hopefully one day too, us too.